Start the
Good on
recording.
the meeting.
Thank you.
The Equitable Housing and Development meetings. It's October 4 p.m. This meeting is held virtually. Social distance. We continue our efforts in meeting remotely. Commissioners and guests until called upon to speak to back. Dialed in using the call number. Dial star 6 on your phone. Also, prior to speaking, announce who you are to identify yourself. As a reminder, this meeting is recorded. You only use a chat function to speak or not. Leaving the speaking track. All state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio, not by using the chat function. Bill Edmonds.
I am present, and I just want to warn the group that I may be having a horrible internet connection.
Oh, great. Both of us.
No, I can't hear. You keep cutting out, and so the captioning isn't working either.
Captioning's not working. Internet's
well, it's not working because the internet keeps cutting out from the speakers. Is it just for me that they're cutting out?
No, Jim, I think that there might be something going on with your internet connection. I took my video off to use less bandwidth, but maybe... maybe someone can step in while you're trying to get your internet working.
Okay. You want to step in? I'm going to see if I can upgrade some. Yeah, it's telling me my internet's unstable. Mike, do you mind running this for a little bit till I get this?
Yeah, I'll do what I can. And Neto, you might need to assist me because I had just run in the door myself as I kind of tried to warn him about it. So I'm still pulling up agendas and everything. So, yeah, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead, do what you need to do. I'll keep going with roll call if everybody's okay with hearing my voice. So I am present, Sharia. Is Sharia present?
It's late.
Okay. Jim, do you want to restart your computer and I can, you know, go slow on the roll call?
Sure. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay. Apologies to everyone. So Jim Toffel is here, but he'll be back. Liz Wilson?
Here.
Jay Young?
Here.
Mindy Bernstein?
Here.
Lori Mazurbo?
She's absent.
Thank you, Ernesto. Joanne Carr?
Yeah.
Kai Brianna Washington? Ken Brianna Washington?
She's not here.
Thank you. Maggie Amato Tellez?
Here.
Wendy Asher?
She is excused.
Thank you. Mary Ann Beerling?
She went home sick today.
W. Mark Clark.
He's excused.
Vicky Cusino.
Here.
Olga Flores.
Excused today.
Okay. And those are the voting members. Now to the ex officio members. Marcos Ismail.
Here.
Marcos, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you're you. Pretty good. Ismail.
Okay. Betty Villegas. Betty Villegas.
She's not here.
Thank you. Corn Manning.
Excused.
And Liz Morales.
I am here.
Okay.
And Shariah is joined us now.
Okay. Welcome, Shariah.
Hi.
Ernesto, should we proceed with item 2, review and adoption of the September 1st, 2022 meeting minutes, or proceed without Jim?
It's up to you. There is quorum, right? Yes. Ken Brianna's.
Oh, for a moment there, you cut out a little bit. Say that again, please, Ernesto.
Kim Brianna is coming in.
Oh, okay.
You can go ahead and deal with the minutes.
All right.
You have quorum.
All right, then While we wait for Jim for a moment, does anyone have any questions or comments about the September 1st, 2022 meeting minutes?
Are they posted on the website?
They should be. I'll double check now.
Not on the website. They were sent to you in the invite.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure they're in my email. I'm just pulling everything up in my inbox as well for the September 1st meeting minutes. Do you, the person with the question, do you want to go ahead and scan your email for it?
I've got it. I was not in attendance, so I just want an opportunity to review. I'm not able to make a motion because I wasn't there.
Anyone else with any questions about the September 1st meeting minutes?
I can't find them.
Ernesto, do you remember what the title of that the email was?
Well, it's in the invite that you received for this meeting.
Ah, thank you.
They're attached as well as the agenda.
Okay. Oh, I see it. Hold on. I think I found mine. And if I give you the date, it might be helpful. I'm looking at an email received from Ernesto on October the 18th. I received it at 2:17 p.m., 2 days ago. It is titled Commission on Equitable Housing and Community Development. And if you open that email message and scroll a little bit, I have three attachments, but it's really...
Oh, there it is. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Not a problem. Is there anyone else having trouble accessing those minutes? Okay. Then as we, again, wait for Jim.
I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
What day was that email?
Yeah, let me click back a little bit to my email account. I am showing a date of, so Ernesto sent it on October the 18th, which was a Tuesday, and I received mine at 2:17 in the afternoon, 2:17 p.m.
Oh, yeah, I got it. It's funny. It doesn't show as with the little, paperclip. I don't know why. So yeah, perfect.
Yeah, every system's a little different. So I'm just making sure my doc opens and it should be fine. Also found your agenda, Ernesto. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing with Jim, Ernesto? Do you see him coming back?
No, he has not come in.
Okay, not a problem. I just want to try to keep tabs on him.
Mm-hmm.
So. Does anyone else, or is anyone else interested in taking a little bit more time to look at the September 1st minutes? Okay, because I have them on my screen now. And with that, I will ask, is there anyone opposed to approving the minutes? It seems as no one opposed to approving the minutes, so I'd like to move along as the minutes are approved for the record. And I'll go back to my agenda for the day. Call to the audience. Okay, I think we can do this while we wait for Jim. I might need a little help on the stopwatch, but this is the time when any member of the public may address the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Due to time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes each. Due to open meeting law, commission members cannot discuss topics that are not on the agenda. Items brought up by the public may be considered as an agenda item for a future meeting. I note the time as 4:15. Are there any members of the public interested in speaking? And Ernesto, if you will, help me with this.
I will. No one's raised their hand yet.
Okay.
Hey, Mike and Ernesto. We did have a question in the Q&A, and I'm wondering, would this be the appropriate time to, I don't know, would this be appropriate call to the audience?
I'm taking a look at it right now. Let me see.
Perfect.
Okay. There's someone in the, that submitted a Q&A, and to paraphrase the question, if I may. I'm new to this process of participating. Please explain, but I don't understand the following request. public manifestation anywhere at any time. So I don't believe this is a question I'm able to address because I don't believe I fully understand it.
Hey, Mike, as a point of order, this isn't listed on the agenda. If members of the public would like to make statements, I'm sure that Housing and Community Development folks can guide them through the call to the audience statement, but any Q&A would have to be agendized or points of order.
I completely agree with you. Thank you very much, Liz. Thanks for keeping me on track. So we'll close the question.
I had a question, though, just about why can we can see the question, but why can't we see the person here in the meeting? Is that because of the new way the meeting is set up?
Yes, and we're going to explain some of the changes.
It's on the agenda. Okay. Yeah, I would like to understand clarification on that as well.
It's agenda item number 4.
Okay.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Welcome back, Jim. I'm at item 3, call to the audience.
Okay. I'm going to leave my video off. If my audio starts to get garbled, please let me know. Okay. So we've approved the meeting minutes for September. So we're on agenda item number 3. This is the call to the audience. And this is the time when any member of the public may address the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Due to time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes, and individuals are allowed up to 3 minutes each. Due to open meeting laws, Commission members cannot discuss topics that are not on the agenda. Items brought up by the public may be considered as an agenda item for future meetings. So is there anyone who would like to speak? And Nesto, are you able to see if members want to speak?
Yes, I can see if someone raises their hand.
Yeah, and just if folks want to raise their hand, it would be in the bottom menu.
We have a raised
Zoom screen. Okay.
I have a raised hand from Victoria Lundsten Barone. Victoria?
Okay, Victoria, yes. Can you speak?
Yeah, my question is, it doesn't seem to be anywhere in the email or on the website an understanding of how these meetings are conducted for the public to participate. I don't know how often or how many people you actually have participating, especially since this technology is new and people have not learned it. I, in fact, have the idea that I need to watch a YouTube video to fully understand it. So I think there's some inequity. And I really think that we need to consider what it means to even have the public. If this is a public commission, what does that mean? What do these things mean? I'm not educated on these things. I'm not privileged. I am very blessed to have a phone with service and a roof over my head. That's where I'm at right now. I'd appreciate some directions or a PDF or put on the website or something, some instructions of some sort. That's all.
Okay, we understand, Victoria. Thank you for that feedback. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Liz?
I'd like to move on to the next agenda item and then circle back to call to the audience once the audience can be informed on how this works.
Okay. I understand. I think I understand what you're saying. So we're going to review the new virtual meeting procedures, agenda item number 4. Since we're talking about adjusting the agenda, there is one other change that I'd like to make, which is the update on the HAST items, Sarah Megan's item number 7. I'd like to move that up prior to the subcommittee updates, because I think some of the things that she's going to be talking about, the HAST plan, impact the affordable housing update. So is there any objections to that? Either of those changes? Okay, so since there's no objections, we're gonna jump ahead to agenda item number 4, then we'll jump back to 3, we'll jump up to 7, and back to 5. So agenda item number four is review of the new virtual meeting procedures. And Nesto, is that you or who's going to be
doing that? That's HCD staff. Yes. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, commissioners and attendees. Thank you for your patience and your understanding as we transition into the webinar format. I myself am still learning the highs and lows, ins and out of the webinar, but we're going to try the webinar to give us a little bit of more ability to manage the meetings. So as you've already noted, commissioners as well as the public can register for the webinar and can access the meeting. The live chat has been disabled in big part because the Boards and Commissions Office of the City of Tucson considers that out of order, so to speak, because it's not captured. The discussion between people is not captured and is not deemed proper in keeping within the spirit of an open meeting. That is probably the biggest change to address some of Victoria's questions and concerns. And thank you, Victoria, for that. On the website, the agenda is listed. Minutes go up after the meeting. There is an access button to access this meeting, which is also being live streamed on YouTube. We don't have an instructional video how to use it. We can walk people through it if they need it, but we don't have a tutorial on how to use it. But it's somewhat intuitive by just, again, registering and the day of the meeting, you access the meeting. Rachel, is there anything you want to add on the changes, or Anne?
The one thing I would say is, as Ernesto mentioned, there are some things that we are required to do mm-hmm. per open meeting law and per the clerk's office. And there are other things that right now we're recommending based on what happened at the last meeting. And you as the commission have some ability to recommend and weigh in on those. And so if there are things that you think you'd rather see in terms of the meeting structure and the Zoom, we can schedule something at the next meeting to go over. But based on what happened last time, we are recommending for the next few months trying to keep a tighter grasp on how this goes to avoid that. But I just wanted to remind you all, it is your commission. And so it will be up to you as long as if it's open meeting law, we can't do it. If it's something that the clerk's office is telling us, you can do this, you can't do that, we can't do it. But there's some flexibility in there.
Can I jump in here? This is Liz Morales. I'm the director for housing. In response to how can the public interact with the commission, I think is a really good question. And, the one way that the public outside of the commissioners and the ex officio commissioners, ex officio members, is to just provide your comments in the call to audience. And then also you can always email to the staff questions and issues that we can get to the commission group. So, I believe public input is really important. And I know the commission is very open to hearing from the public. So those are probably the two best ways to interact with the commission and ask questions. If there's any correction that's needed, staff, let me know. But I wanted to address that question.
I would also like to add in really quick for accessibility and things. We did have a toll-free call-in option, but unfortunately, we did have to go through some IT changes, and we are in the process of repurchasing our toll-free call-in option for these meetings, and we are also purchasing a live language translation as well. if that is helpful for folks to know. It's just in the pipeline of being purchased and wasn't able to be before this meeting.
Thank you, Rachel. Liz, there's some hands up. Chairman Jim, you want to call on them?
Liz was first. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. I just wanted to request that the city have a link to how to use these, how to use Zoom in this capacity. I have a link. I'm emailing it to y'all. If you could just please put it with the important links, I think that would benefit everyone so that we don't have to have this conversation every meeting.
Okay, thank you, Liz. We had talked, I think, briefly at the last meeting in September about trying to meet in person again. And so I'd like to just get the temperature from the group. If we want to do that, we could have it partially in person, partially virtual. So those who are not comfortable doing in person, we'll still have the Zoom option. But for those who want to meet in person, we could, I think, use HCD or the site over off of Commerce Drive, correct, Ann?
Correct.
Yeah, we could use that to run our meetings. How does everyone feel about that?
I'll jump in. I'm ambivalent. I really am enjoying Zoom, that I don't have to get in my car and use gas to make it to a meeting. It's about a carbon footprint issue for me. I'm happy that we have the option of meeting in person as well, because I like to see people sometimes. So thanks.
Well, let's go ahead. I'm going to let everybody else speak, and then we'll come back to that question. Vicki?
I won't meet in person. I'm limiting my exposure because I'm caring for somebody with a compromised immune system.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I just want to say I'm not opposed to meeting in person, but, you know, depending on everyone's schedule, including mine, as well as transportation, because if they bring back fees at the beginning of the year for SunTran, I might be public transportationly challenged, I guess, so to speak. So those are just my thoughts and concerns, Jim.
Okay. Shay?
I think it'd be nice to have the option for both, personally.
Okay. Maggie?
Yeah, I like the hybrid and the option. I think we're losing a lot by not getting to know one another in person. I don't think you can do that very well online.
Okay. Well, I think maybe what I'll do, if everyone's okay with it, is I'll work with HCD to get a location defined. So for those of you who want to meet in person, we'll have that ability. I would probably prefer in person. I just think there's a lot of nonverbal communication that gets lost virtually. But if you want, you know, Mindy or if somebody doesn't feel comfortable meeting in person, then the virtual option is going to still exist. Jay?
From my perspective, I'm comfortable meeting in person, but I do think there's a real trade-off. I actually think meeting virtually does, in the end, allow more people to participate. Honestly, I think it's hard for people to, you know, get places in person. And I would also say, just in my experience, I think doing hybrid where, you know, there's a group in person and then there's other people participating virtually, I think it's really kind of puts the people participating virtually kind of as second class participants. And I don't think it's a great option. I don't think many places have perfected it to the point where it's very viable. So, you know, if we want to try it, that's great. But I just really feel like the hybrid option is the worst of all worlds.
Okay. Liz?
I agree with all the points Jay made. Also, I have a hearing impairment, and using the virtual method makes it so that I'm being accommodated, quite honestly. I also, my partner works in a hybrid environment, and like every time he's virtual and people are in person, he gets ignored. So unless someone's going to be actively engaging with the virtual participants, I just think that it's a major equity issue.
Okay.
So I feel like we just got pretty conflicting direction.
Yep.
And so one thing we can do is do a poll before the next meeting. And I feel like at this point, unless you want to kind of call a vote now, it just seems like on the staff side, not entirely sure how to support you on that.
Yeah. I guess my knee jerk is to maybe try it one or two times. And if it's not working, we can reassess about going back to complete virtual. Let me think on this a little bit more. Maybe a poll is probably the best way to go. Mindy?
Jim, I was going to throw out giving ourselves a little bit of time to think about this. COVID still is out there. New varieties are, I just got my booster. I'm so proud of it. I think thinking about this for a little bit may bring it up next month.
Okay. Well, let's do a poll and let's see what the feedback comes back from all the commission members. We are missing a bunch of people right now. Michael?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of help, maybe try to help you out with the questions, Jim. I see three potential questions. One, do we do it in person? Two, do we do hybrid? Or three, do we continue with Zoom? And that's it. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Maggie?
I would just, and then to add to what Michael said is also, maybe it doesn't have to be every meeting, but maybe, I don't know, once a quarter. I think I really would like to meet people, those that are willing and able, just to, you know, see what everyone's perspective is from. I think that's the part that I think is important, at least start to. Yeah. And I know you had a little kind of happy hour thing and I couldn't make it. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I think it seems like we're pretty well split down the middle here. So we'll do a poll, and maybe a hybrid approach or something where we switch back and forth is going to be the best way. But we'll put some more thought into that. Any other thoughts or comments before we go back to agenda item number three?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like the way the space is designed is really important, like what that experience is like. Like I'm imagining if everyone was like on a huge screen and they were huge and we couldn't miss them, I feel like, and everyone, you know, we're all staring at the screen and it felt like people on the screen had equal weight to people in the room. I think that there's a way that could feel equal with some thought and planning.
Okay. Maggie, did you have something else? Are you good?
No, sorry. I'll take that down.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to the call to audience. Same rules in place. If you would like to speak, please raise your hand. Okay, Victoria.
My question is, what is the expectation? Because unrealistic expectations are frustrating. if one cannot publicly educate them, A, about the meeting, how it's run, where it is, where you can find the information, then you've already cut down a lot of possible people who might want to participate. I am a part of various alliances, so I am working very hard on these things. And then the other thing is you haven't covered, I mean, you're not required to cover, but at least share a link of Zoom tutorial, Zoom etiquette, do's and do nots of Zoom hybrid use is something you might want to look up. Maybe there's articles on social psychology. And really, it's more about people being able to have a voice and that equity, that throat chakra equity. It's all a matter of perception, really. And I think that if you explain exactly like what quorum is or what kind of style and the rules and regulations, is it a parliamentary thing? This is not something that most people who might want to participate would actually know about. So while you go about doing your meeting, they might just be sitting there not knowing exactly what the heck you're talking about or what's going on. So I think it's important because these people are participating in other ways. They are out there doing the dirty work. They are having a part, but then not to have a part equitably about the city-based commission, I think is very unvirtuous. And that's all I have to say. I'm going to do my homework. I made a checklist. So. And, you know, Silicon Valley and everything else, this is all new for everybody else on remote work. But it doesn't matter what company or industry you're working in. People are mastering this, especially if they're used to having internet and actually a little bit well off, like housing and stuff like that. So if you guys really got there, it would definitely say something about who you are and what you're doing. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Victoria. Is there anybody else who would like to speak? Okay, we're going to move now to agenda item number 7, which is the update on the HASS plan. Sarah, you have the floor.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim. And good evening, commissioners. My name is Sarah Megason, and I am the Housing Development Manager with HCD, and I'm going to give a presentation on the HAST plan. So HAST, for those of you who may or may not be aware, stands for Housing Affordability Strategy for Tucson. Sorry, I'm also just trying to get it so that my Zoom and my PowerPoint are kind of symbiotic over here on my screen. All right. So the goal of this meeting is to kind of go over the HAST, give you some reminders of what the 10 policies and actions are inside of it, and to sort of give you an update on the progress that we have been making. The HAST was adopted in December of 2021, so we're at an October 2022, giving you an update on where we've made it so far with the HAST plan. So there are 10 policies, and this is a refresher to kind of run through the policies and the action plan items, touching on key accomplishments that we've made along the way. And then at the end, we're going to give you the first look of at the implementation tracker that we've created, which is a work in progress, and we're going to want your recommendations and input on that tracker as well. So to run through all 10, hopefully not take up too much time, but wanted you to see all 10 of them. Number one is to transform public housing, and the sub policies underneath are to create a repositioning plan and then submit a rental assistance demonstration application. So this is, as Anne has been known to say, a chance for us to get our own house in order, to look at our inventory in our public housing and create a repositioning and rehabilitation strategy. A lot of these are in the works right now. We did receive technical assistance from HUD to develop the repositioning strategy, and now we're working on the repositioning plan and working to potentially submit a RAD application for the Tucson House. Policy number 2 is to build capacity in Tucson around affordable housing development. Becoming our own developers and working with different developers has really been a driving force for policy number 2. This is where I come into play. So one of the action plans inside of the policy or inside of HASS was to hire a dedicated staff person for affordable housing development. So that's me. So you guys got a big check mark for getting me on board. We're also in the process of creating the HCD development arm. So the El Pueblo Housing Development Nonprofit has been established, and we're working through all the details with that. We're working with co-developers to assist with some of our current projects, which includes the Tucson House, Westmoreland and Dunbar lots, and our Milagro and Oracle low-income housing tax credit project. And another part of my role on a day-to-day basis is assisting other affordable housing development partners in the community to get certain projects through. So helping with the Gateway Project, Cascade, Newport, some other homing project, and working with Quadro and Picklet on the Barrio Anita project. So trying to be an assistant to other developers to help, you know, get them through the system for affordable housing development. Just to kind of toot our horn for one of our projects that we do have, you are all probably well aware that we won the LIHTC award for Tucson, the low-income housing tax credit, and our Milagro on Oracle is going to be a new 63-unit for older adults housing with 15 units in two existing historic motor courts and 48 new units inside of a new building being built in between the two of them. There, it is currently going through the entitlement and design process, and we are going through the Grant Road Investment District. So we're going to be using the grid, and it's the first project to use the grid overlay as well. And this is really an exciting opportunity to work through and learn on the fly as we go to assist with more clearly how affordable housing is built and where some of those barriers come into play so that, you know, we can hopefully make some changes and make it easier for everyone. So number three is to prioritize and facilitate affordable housing in areas of opportunity, creating a checklist, evaluating changes to our human relations ordinance, and promoting housing in key revitalization areas were the three sub-policies. So we've created a couple of tools that helping us in this process of the checklist. We have an opportunity mapping project that our space team created, which aggregates indicators of opportunity across the city, which includes access to transportation, services, jobs, and quality education. And then the indicators are weighted using input from public housing residents where housing is most important to them. So this tool is intended to be used to make funding and policy and acquisition decisions that reduce housing segregation and increase access to opportunity for low-income populations. So we've created these two tools to help us with that. I'll talk more about the real estate acquisition scoring tool on a later slide. And also we have some areas that we have focused some housing in. So we do have the Thrive in the 05, where we have a few projects, the Grant Road Investment District. And we're also looking at the other areas that were outlined in the plan and getting to them when we can, but sort of focused on the first two areas right now. Policy number four is to expand efforts to preserve and enhance existing housing. This is a lot of stuff about accessory dwelling units and the sub-policies and manufactured housing rehab and potentially creating a new rehabilitation program for multifamily buildings. So we do have the ADU improvement program as a part of our rehabilitation application, and that's coming soon. We've sort of got the framework for it all lined up, and we're just working to get a few more staff on our rehab division so that we can implement this and get some funding out there for ADU rehabilitation. We selected Partners for Affordable and Stable Housing, ARPA Manufactured Home Rehabilitation Program. And we're continually working with partners like PCCLT, the Community Land Trust, and Mi Casita, and Planning and Development Services to create education around the accessory dwelling unit ordinance and promoting more development of those units in our community. Policy number five is to update regulations to encourage affordable housing. So how can we incorporate incentives into planning and overlay zoning on transit corridors, promoting high quality climate adaptive design of new housing, and updating the development standards to create tools to incentivize affordable housing. So we have gotten a couple things accomplished here. We included affordable housing projects as eligible projects to request a parking reduction through the individual parking plan that was approved in August. We're looking at the Sunshine Mile affordable housing incentive and developing recommendations for revised incentives. And we're kind of starting to include those in the update of the infill incentive district. So what we learned from Sunshine Mile and making sure that when we add it into a new overlay, we're tweaked to make it so that it works better. And then we're also looking at ways to update the code to incentivize affordable housing development. And that includes parking reductions, maybe by right, looking at how setbacks and height and density, all of those things affect affordable housing development. Number six is to facilitate development by reducing costs through innovation. There is a task inside of the HASC plan to initiate a formal policy to expedite permitting for affordable housing. This is something that has not been officially started yet and something I think that is everybody's tongue to bring up and try to make happen in the community. But we did expand the eligibility for impact fee subsidy. So mayor and council did expand the waiver so that nonprofit developers and for-profit developers can apply to use this. And they also expanded the affordability threshold up to 100% of AMI for 20-year affordability period. So that broadened the opportunity for people to apply for the impact fee subsidy, and mayor and council passed that in March. Number seven is to develop affordable and mixed-income housing on city-owned properties. This one is also kind of a big one in my wheelhouse, working to prioritize acquisition opportunities. So we created a real estate acquisition scoring tool to help us figure out the best places to build low-income tax credit projects based off of what the qualified allocation plan has, based off of zoning, based off of size. So we have a tool that we can now use internally to assess properties and see if we can acquire them and if they will be productive for us to build on. We have developed a strategy and have begun development for phase one sites that were listed in the plan. This included the Constan Lots in Barrio Anita, which Pima County Community Land Trust and Quadro are in development right now. We have the 11th Avenue and Dunbar Spring parcels, and they are currently being worked on in development, kind of working through the initial phases of that. And then the Westmoreland and Menlo Park is moving along. And then we have our Milagro on Oracle, which is the no-tell motel project near Oracle and Alturas as well. Some pre-development on additional sites that we've added into our list, working on some pre-development for South 10th, a big parcel that the city owns. We're working to potentially acquire a motel using some grant funding that we applied for through Arizona Department of Housing, and then consistently looking for more projects to add into our development arm to get going here in the city. Number eight is to enhance efforts aimed at housing Tucsonans most vulnerable to housing instability. So this one's really to work for expanding housing for individuals and families fleeing domestic abuse, supporting the work of the Affordable Housing Alliance, supporting small-scale housing for youth and older adults, rehabilitating the Tucson House, since we know a lot of the people who live in the Tucson House fall into this category, and supporting new permanent supportive housing projects. So the commission had given a recommendation to mayor and council for HCD to issue an annual funding process to develop at least one permanent supportive housing project per year. We didn't do a specific funding process this year, but we did include it with our home ARC RFP process. And we've committed $3 million in home ARC funds for PSH units, the permanent supportive housing projects. We've committed 65 HCVs, housing choice vouchers, for public permanent supportive housing projects. And we requested money from ADOH to convert the Amazon Hotel to a permanent supportive housing. So we definitely are focused on permanent supportive housing and trying to get more of that inventory online as fast as possible. Policy 9 is to pursue additional and more sustainable funding streams for affordable housing. So the first policy, sub-policy, is to reinstate the Tucson Housing Fund, to evaluate adding in a future bond or tax measure to voters, and to advocate for more state and federal funding. So these are all still being explored. There's opportunity for you all to, you know, move some things forward with recommendations to mayor and council. We're looking at possibility of how we can better use ARPA funds to potentially bolster the housing trust fund. And then looking for mayor and council support. And the fact that they do support housing right now is a key priority in this legislative agenda, and to continue pushing for more support for affordable housing. And our 10th policy is really to expand education, outreach, and research efforts. I think we're all doing this on a daily basis inside of the space team, especially. We know it's a tight housing market and that it's critical we effectively and efficiently utilize resources that are currently available and understand the emerging trends out there to respond to how needs change. It's I think, a constant learning process for everyone. So definitely keep up with the website, tucsonaz.gov/HC. We are also on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, where we're constantly trying to help educate and get information out there about all of our programming and opportunities that we have within the Housing and Community Development Department. And so I wanted to take you real quick to show you how you can access our implementation tracker and follow along with all of these as we go through. So the Housing Affordability Strategy for Tucson website, which is linked through the HCD website, now has an implementation tab located up at the top of the website. And by clicking on that, it'll take you to the implementation website. And this is, like I said, something we've been working on, and it isn't perfect. So if you see a spelling error, you can email me and let me know, because I've been frantically trying to get it launched. But ultimately, it's sort of like a live little widget inside of the website. And you can click through the policies that you see on the left side. And once you're inside of the policy that you are focused on, you can click on the sub-policy buttons to navigate through those different sub-policies as a part of the plan. So just to give you an example, facilitate development by reducing costs. It talks about what that policy is. You can go through and see streamline review process for affordable housing projects, initiate a formal policy to expedite permitting for affordable housing. There is no checkbox because we haven't officially started that. But as we move forward and we do get some things checked, like mayor and council approving the expansion of the impact fee subsidy, you can see that it's been checked off and getting progress made on the plan. So that's sort of a quick overview of how to navigate through the tracker, and just sort of keep an eye out for what we're doing. One thing that I forgot to mention in the PowerPoint that I really wanted to bring up, which was another check mark that I think we were all very proud of, was the mayor and council passing the source of income protection ordinance in September. So that's a part of policy 3 and 3.2. And so now we are working on developing the enforcement plan for the income protection ordinance. And then once we get that created, you'll be able to see another checkbox. So we'll share the link with you as well. And we'll put the link on the website. Like I said, it's on the affordability housing strategy, the housing affordability strategy website, under the implementation tab. And definitely we'll love to have any feedback that you all have, and any thoughts on how to make it more user-friendly, or, you know, easier to read or access, et cetera.
Thank you, Sarah. That was good. So is it any comments or questions for Sarah? Liz?
Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah. I have several questions, actually. So the first thing that you mentioned that I don't know what this is grid overlay. Can you explain what that is, please?
Yeah, so we have a couple of overlay districts, which are a part of the Unified Development Code, or they were ordinances drafted kind of outside of it. So there's the Sunshine Mile Overlay District, which is that stretches along the corridor of the Broadway sort of widening project. And that was passed last year. And that was sort of the first overlay district that included some affordable housing incentives. And then there's other overlay districts, and we have one that's codified, which is the infill incentives district. So the infill incentive district is a part of the Unified Development Code, and it is currently being updated because they put a sunset date on it, like every 3 years, mayor and council wants it to come back to them for revaluation. So it's currently being revised, and they're trying to include in it some affordable housing incentives that are a little different from the Sunshine Mile to promote affordable housing in the infill incentive district. And I can share with the commission links to that. They have a whole website going on right now. They had a couple public meetings last week. It's an effort out of Planning and Development Services, and it goes to Planning Commission next week, and then it'll go to Mayor and Council and get voted on in January.
So a grid overlay is a type of zoning overlay?
Yes, yeah. So the Grant Road Investment District is also another overlay. We have the IID, the infill incentive district, and that's in the code. And then we have the Grant Road Investment District, the Main Gate Overlay District, and the Sunshine Mile Overlay. And those are all, they're not in the code. They're kind of like bigger planned area developments. They're basically a zoning that lay on top that are voluntarily, you can volunteer to opt into them, or you can just build using the underlying zoning.
Awesome, thank you. And then you mentioned that there is opportunity development that's underway, and you said that a couple of different criteria are going into identifying those areas for opportunity. Is that based on opportunity zoning from the Treasury Department? I know that we had a presentation on that study that you mentioned, but can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, and there's kind of two different opportunity mappings that we have going on, and I think that we'll most likely be coming back to you guys to show the one that like Allison and Laura Sharp were working on, which was more of looking at where do people in the community want their housing to be. So that was the survey that went out for that type of opportunity mapping was, do you prefer your housing to be near a grocery store or a public library? Or do you prefer your housing to be near a public school or public park? And started to ask questions of the community to understand sort of what people think is most important. Granted, all of those things are important, I think, definitely, but it was to try to understand what types of people living in certain types of housing, what they value most, and to start to use that, create a checklist that we can, you know, begin to use for siting and also using for allocation of funding. Then the other opportunity mapping was more for our internal purposes for real estate acquisition. And those were looking at more very sort of objective standards that are have to be met, like the size of the parcel, making sure that the zoning allows for residential use and that it's in a qualified census tract, or things that are required from the Arizona Department of Housing Qualified Allocation Plan, so that we weren't just buying land that, you know, you can't build on, wouldn't be able to be funded. So then I think the goal is to end up merging kind of both of those tools, but we're kind of still in the process of that as well.
The development of city-owned properties that you mentioned, is that the city doing the development, or is that the city offloading real estate that they own for private development?
It's the city doing the development. Any city-owned property that we have right now that we're going to develop, we're either going to develop ourselves or develop in partnership with a co-developer, but the city is going to maintain the land. If we do a co-development, we will maintain the land and do a land lease option. But the goal is to have city maintain ownership, that so that we can maintain long-term affordability throughout its lifetime. So All city-owned land that's being assessed for affordable housing is either going to be developed through the development arm or in partnership with co-developers.
Okay, last question. Is the youth-oriented small-scale housing that you mentioned, is that part of the existing YHDP housing project, or is there an additional housing project for youth that's under development?
I'm going to ask Anne to chime in on that one.
Yeah. Liz, good question. It is not, long story short, it is in addition to. So it is not the existing program. What that is the city partner grants for the state and local fiscal recovery funding. There was grant opportunities to that. Now it was, I believe, in March when they released the grant opportunities, where if you were looking at small scale development for youth, for older adults, you could apply. I believe off the top of my head, don't quote me on this, IM360 was the one that applied and received funding who's focused on youth. And one thing to know is the city's partner grants for state and local fiscal recovery funding are scheduled to be released soon again. So there could be more opportunities if people are focused on youth or older adults to get in some more small scale development and get some funding for that.
Awesome. Thank you both.
Thank you, Liz.
Maggie. Oh, you want to add to that, Sarah?
No.
So just, Sarah, when, you know, going back to what Liz asked about the development of city-owned development and how you're going to basically, you know, lease the land back, you know, I just haven't ever asked this question, but I'm, you know, wondering why you wouldn't use a, you know, a community land trust like we have, at least we have Pima County Community Land Trust to do this, because that's really what we were designed to do. But important, also importantly, is that, you know, the city of Tucson actually created us. So I just want to understand why the city is, you know, going that route versus supporting the existing land trust.
I think that, and I might have Anne chime in as well. I think that the goal is to look at as many opportunities as we can. And so, you know, we did just do the partnership with Pima Community Community Land Trust on the Barrio Anita lots. And I think at this point, since we're trying to start the development arm, we want to kick that off and get our feet wet and start to learn through the process. And I think that the goal is to look at how we can use land trusts or the land trust model in the city. One thing that I've learned and kind of brought in is a lot of work that I had done in Colorado up in the High Rockies. So hearing that land trusts and deed restrictions and shared equity models in general are very progressive and also like hot. They're, everybody's moving towards those models as we go along. And so I think we're just getting our feet wet and starting to work into it. And I know there's going to be plenty of opportunity for collaboration and work together in the future between, I'm sure, the Pima County Community Land Trust and the City of Tucson Housing Development Arm. I think that there's been an appetite for the city to maintain some of the ownership of the land. And I don't know all of the history as to why that is right now. And maybe Anne will be able to chime in a little more. But I think it's so that we can have control and maintain that affordability. And I know that you guys also do that as well. But I think that the appetite right now is to try to get in and see what we can accomplish in the city with the development arm to start.
If I can jump in here, this is Liz. Yeah. I just want to say that this approach does not mean we do not want to be so prescriptive that it puts us, you know, without the ability to do multiple options. So the idea is, when is it most appropriate for the city to do it versus partnering with our community nonprofits? So just know that it's a wide range, and then each individual project will be evaluated. And again, this was at the direction of Mayor and Council to make sure we had the ability to do land trust ourselves if that seems to be the best option, or to do it with our agencies, our nonprofits in Tucson.
All right, thank you.
Mindy?
I'm wondering if the city is in dialogue at all with the, I think it's Arizona Complete Healthcare, which has a contract for administering taxpayer dollars for indigent or, you know, low-income individuals that I'm wondering if the city is partnering or talking with them. In my experience, it has always been the behavioral health agencies, the state funded to provide so much housing. And I am so grateful that the city is stepping in and doing what you're doing, because without you, there would be far fewer housing options. I'm just curious if there's any dialogue with them at all and their responsibility.
I'm not aware of any, Anne, or I don't think we do. Mindy, if you don't mind sending us the info on that, maybe we could get in contact with them.
Be happy to. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Liz?
I just wanted to address Mindy's question. I used to work at a behavioral health agency in town. They contract through the state, not through the city.
Oh.
Because access is state regulated.
Yeah, I know. I'm thank you for that. Yes, it is an access regulated. The state of Arizona nationally, contracts are being given to for-profit insurance companies to administer the state dollars. And I have seen quite a change happen in our community since that changeover happened. And that's why I am curious if there's been dialogue with the city and the entity that is responsible for providing the housing for many of the people who I see that are unhoused.
If I can jump in also on this one, Mindy, this is a near and dear issue. I was just on a board meeting last night. Medicaid just Access just got a waiver from the feds to do an expansion on Medicaid that would allow for around housing costs. And I know very little about it, so I may not be stating it correctly, but we now have a statewide housing provider. So my hope is we have to have these conversations, and we've already know that Access has supported units at the Center for Hope, basically like a project-based voucher type model. So we know they're already looking at investing in housing here in Tucson. So we have one model, and they're open to more opportunities to help layer funding or provide subsidies. So there's this is an area of huge opportunity that I don't think we've even tapped into yet. So this is definitely something that we need to be doing more of here soon.
Great.
Okay, Maggie, before I call on you, there's a question in the chat from Kimbriana about what is considered youth. We're talking about, I don't remember what that was regarding.
And Kimbriana, feel free to, if you want to clarify more, but I'm assuming, because I mentioned the youth and older adult housing for small scale. And so I'm trying to actually find if they defined youth in there. So This is not run by our department, and I can't find that right now, but I can certainly get that back to you. In terms of this commission, in terms of having you represent the youth voice, the idea there is, as it was defined by the commission, was 18 to 23. But I will get back to you when I learn more on the small scale, the funding for youth, small scale housing development.
Does that answer your question, Ben Brianna? Okay. Maggie.
Good. I just wanted to kind of address what Mindy said and Liz, and both Liz both Liz Wilson and Morales that we actually have a small fourplex where we received access funds and also geo bonds. So there is an ability to kind of get in there. And now that Liz just said there's more money, we should, I think we could, you know, definitely go after some of those funds for more access funds, definitely.
Okay. Any other final comments before we move on to the subcommittee updates? Nesto.
Jim, before we move on to subcommittee, I want to let the commission know that Commissioner Marcos Ismael was dropped from Zoom and has not been able to get back on despite us resending him link after link after link. So just to let you know.
Okay. Who dropped?
Marcos Ismael.
Oh, Marcos. Oh, okay. Ismael. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so our next agenda item is agenda item number 5, subcommittee updates. First is the housing segregation. Now, Jay, I think you gave your update last time. I don't know if you want to re-summarize. Oh, wait, no, you were gone last time. So go ahead.
Yeah, I unfortunately, maybe fortunately, missed all the craziness of last meeting. But I believe Lori was going to give the update, and I don't know if she did. But I think the main thing that came out of our subcommittee meeting is that we asked HCD staff to provide information at our next subcommittee meeting, or you know, kind of as soon as they can, I guess, to better understand what has been done in the past, meaning up until now, basically, to address gentrification and displacement, as well as any future plans to address that issue. You know, after a really good conversation in our subcommittee, we kind of circled around to the fact that, you know, gentrification and displacement was one of the main reasons for this committee being formed, and we've done very little about it up to this point, and so we figured that would be a good starting point to get the conversation going and to hopefully approach that issue as we move forward as a subcommittee and as a commission. So that's what I remember from our last subcommittee meeting. I don't, Mike, did I hit it? Vicky and Mike, did I miss anything that we should inform the full commission about regarding our meeting?
I can't think of anything, Jay, but as the other subcommittee or reports are coming in, I'll double check my note.
Okay.
No, I think you got it, Jay.
Okay. Thanks, y'all. That's it, Jim.
Thanks. Liz, housing first.
Yeah, so we had a presentation from Miranda Schubert, who is in the, she is one of the members of Tucson for Everyone. I think she's one of the leaders in that organization, which is a YIMBY Action chapter in Southern Arizona. So we heard from her. We talked a lot about residential zoning and its impacts on affordable housing and accessible housing. We also made plans for this next meeting to invite Brandy Champion, who's attended our meetings in the past and is the Housing First Director with City of Tucson, to give us any updates available, and to also begin efforts on a tenant protection plan, because the Arizona landlord-tenant law tends to be so highly favorable of landlords that tenant protections are not necessarily as available as we'd like them to be.
Thanks. Any questions for, I guess, for Liz or Jay? I'm asking any questions for Jay.
I don't have any questions, but I just want to say, Liz, the Arizona Housing Coalition, we've been working on tenant protections with some national partners. So if there's any information or resource I can provide, let me know, because it's just something that we're working on quite closely. So there might be some opportunity
If you could attend the next meeting and we can work on getting you on the agenda, that would be excellent for us to have some guidance in that conversation. Thank you.
Liz, I was also just going to throw out there that outside of my commission work, I've been working with the Morris Institute for Justice and Wildfire, both I think based in Phoenix, on drafting a tenants' bill of rights that addresses some of these issues as well. And, you know, we would be happy to, as that progresses, to share that with you and the commission if it would be helpful.
Yes, please, Jay. I'm going to touch base with both of you by email later on this week. And I think this is going to be an ongoing conversation. So please pass the word along that this is kind of the next big step that we're working towards on the subcommittee.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Thank you, Liz. Affordable housing, Shay.
Yes, so we spent a lot of time at the beginning getting a motion prepared, a letter that's been drafted by Jim. Should I share that now or are we going to share that later, Jim?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So hold on. Let me share screen. Oh, the screen sharing has been disabled.
I have to make you a host, Shreya.
I apologize. Do you want me to?
Nesto, if you want to make me the host, I can share it. And Jay, you can walk through it if you'd like, because I've got to go through the bylaws. Next.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I do not care. yeah, that's great.
Okay, bear with me for a moment. Where are you, Jim? Okay, you should have it, Jim.
Okay. Okay. There you go. Can everybody see this?
Yes.
Can you guys see this?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Shay.
All right. So can you scroll down a little bit to those main 3 points, Jim? Or 4 points we came up. So basically, you know, we'd like to move forward, you know, especially based on the you know, the implementation tracker that Sarah shared with us, which I think is great. But definitely from that half done, there are some more immediate priorities. And so these are kind of the four we think we'd like to move forward sooner than later. The HASP plan item number 9.1 is reinstating the, someone has their, I think someone needs to be on mute. so one of them was reinstating the City of Tucson Housing Trust Fund. I think that's just so critical. We want to direct per HASP plan item number 5, direct PDSD to review and change zoning regulations in order to encourage affordable housing projects. Again, all the things that Sarah already mentioned, looking at project density, setback requirements, building height, and then process, you know, on the development services side. HASP plan item number 9.2, we'd like to direct staff to evaluate the potential of adding affordable housing in a future bond or tax measure to go to voters. And this is currently being worked on both by the City of Flagstaff and Phoenix. And again, we also think that this can help provide long-term solutions for Tucson. And then equally important is enacting this provision for a fast track approval process for affordable housing projects within PDSD. So, and then the final point that isn't really a motion, but that Jim wrote up in this letter was about just basically trying to encourage our
you know, our electeds to continue to lobby for equal share of LIHTC dollars in our county. And he has shared with us a lot of great data showing how, you know, the inequities that exist across the counties, and that basically most of the funding is going towards to Phoenix and Maricopa County and not to Tucson, especially like related to our population size. So so that's another point we wanted to bring to their attention, is to really you know, be lobbying and working with the ADOH. So that was the majority of our meeting, and then the rest of the meeting we had a great conversation around homeownership and the importance of homeownership, and want to start working towards creating policy items that will also go to support that as well. So I think that's a rough summary. If anyone has anything else they want to add, Jim or Maggie or anybody, please do so.
So just to clarify, we can't actually direct staff to do these things. The request is we're making a recommendation that mayor and council direct staff to do these things. And
yes.
My thought was, is if we approve this, we'll obviously send it to mayor and council. And I would not mind having a follow-up meeting or two with them to kind of talk about what this means and what it would mean to affordable housing in Tucson. Mindy?
This is an incredible document. Thank you for doing this. I was wondering if there's a way that, is there copies of this available for the rest of us?
Yes, I think if we approve it, we'll email it out to everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah. Nesto, can you make a note to do that, please?
Yes, we'll do, Jim. Thank you, Mindy.
Thank you. Liz?
Yeah, so this is great. I don't know if maybe Jay received this, but I didn't. I would really appreciate it if the chairs of the subcommittees could have an opportunity to review it and maybe discuss it with the subcommittees prior to passing it. Also, just in the bullet points, it says passing a source of income discrimination ordinance might be a good idea to state anti-discrimination ordinance. That's it.
Okay. Passing. Wasn't it called the Source of Income Discrimination Ordinance? Wasn't that the name of it?
I think it's actually protections, Source of Income Protections.
Correct.
Okay. Good feedback. Any other comments or questions?
Jim, it's Mike. I just want to agree with Liz that I'd like to get a copy first, please.
Before we vote to pass it, so you guys want to hold off a month, or what are you thinking?
I would vote no, if this were to be put forth as a motion, because I haven't had an opportunity to review it.
I agree.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what then. Our next meeting is only in 2 weeks. So Nesto, if you could send this out, and then we'll ask for a vote in our next meeting. It's only a couple of weeks out. It's not a big deal. Vicki?
Yes, I just would like to request that we, all the commissioners, make a commitment. Well, and also the staff, make a commitment to get all of these materials out in advance. It's really difficult to see a lot of this on the screen. I found the PowerPoint that was presented very difficult to see. And I sent you some notes about that. But thank you for whoever else said, you know, they don't want to approve it now, because it's really difficult to read something on a screen. It's really helpful to have it to be able to review at our own pace. I feel like we get a lot of documents thrown at us just on the screen and not sent to us in advance to review.
Understood. Okay, any other comments before we move on to the next agenda item? Mindy.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicki. I also would appreciate getting documents sent to me ahead of the meeting so that I have paper in hand and I can absorb it, especially like the HAST plan that was just presented to us. I'll go and look for it, but it would have been, I would have appreciated having had it beforehand so that I could savor it. So thank you.
I'm having some questions about, I've been for a while having questions about process, and I would have assumed that would have already gone out in advance. So I guess I'm just wondering where we're missing the gaps. I guess I'm just wondering who's responsible, and I think the roles and responsibilities conversation we're going to get into next, I think is really important to just clarify all of this, because who's responsible for sending out this information? Is it us as commissioners? Is it the city staff? Like, I think that there's a lot of heads and hands involved, which is why it's not intentional that things are falling through the cracks. But when you're managing a group this size, it's just kind of going to be part of the process. So I would just love clarification on all these procedures, basically.
Well, I think in general, some of this probably falls on my shoulders. If the subcommittees want to pass a recommendation, it would probably be good for the chairs to send those out to the group beforehand. If anybody wants to pass something, so for example, the next agenda item is going to be the bylaws. Everybody, I think, should have received those several times, so hopefully that is going to go a little smoother. But I think this is just a constructive feedback going forward. If somebody wants to get something approved, we need to make sure we get the information out before the meeting so that everyone has a chance to review it. That's a fair point of feedback. Andy.
Also, I'd like to, Shreya, this is a process. We're figuring this all out together. So great questions. And could we also get copies of anything that's going to be put up on the screen sent to us beforehand? So that, I don't do well reading documents and things on the screen. I do better. So if we could, I'm mumbling. I'm sorry. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else before we move on to the next agenda item? Okay. Thanks, Shay. Our next agenda item is the debrief on the housing supply study. That was performed last month. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but the state commissioned a housing supply study, and it's made up of about 9 members, I believe. There's a couple of two mayors, a representative from the governor's office, a couple of state house members, a Jones Service from the Housing Coalition was part of it, ADOH is part of it. And
They wanted to basically do a poll around the state to find out why is housing becoming unaffordable. So they had two sessions in Phoenix. They did one in Prescott. They did one in Tucson. There was supposed to be one in Sierra Vista. That one got either canceled or postponed. My personal takeaway from it, so Liz Morales spoke, I spoke, Corin Manning spoke, and then there was, we had, I think, two professors from the U of A. There was about eight or nine people who spoke in the city of Tucson one. And I think there was a lot of good information. My takeaway was that the state is looking to reduce the ability of cities to prohibit development through zoning laws. I think that was kind of the agenda, and that a lot of the questions kept coming back to zoning laws and how that impacted people's ability to do development, because the number of sites available for residential developments has been shrinking, and so there's fewer and fewer sites available. And the zoning process is a very difficult, expensive process with no guarantee of success. So probably 80 to 90% of the questions that were asked by the committee members were regarding zoning changes and zoning impacts. But my understanding is they're going to re-adjourn at the beginning of the year and then propose changes to the state. And we'll see where it goes. It was an interesting process. Is there any questions or any other comments from any of the commission members?
Jim, and this Andy, is
Mike. Anything to add to that? Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to make a statement. For those who were aware of this event prior to it, I'd just like to say I learned about it after the fact, so I wish I had been informed if I were eligible to attend or be aware of it in the future. Please, would somebody keep me in the loop on stuff like this if I can go?
Sure.
Me too.
Yeah, it was kind of a last minute thing. I heard about it on Thursday afternoon. Then the speakers were all identified on Friday, and then it was on the following, I think it was on a Monday. So it all happened very fast. Joe? Oh, wait, Joe needs to be moved to a participant.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yep, we can hear you, Joe.
Yeah, thanks. I was really disappointed with the meeting that was in Tucson, just because I was trying to stream it and it wasn't audible at all. I've listened to all the previous meetings, the one in Flagstaff, the audio wasn't great, but you could hear it. The ones at State Capitol were all pretty audible. The questions that were coming back in those previous meetings that I was able to hear, I would note they're coming from the loudest voices on this committee, and they are the lobbyists for Arizona multi-housing, for the Central Arizona Home Builders, and the Arizona Realtors Association. So there are definitely other members on there, but that's really, it seems to me, who is focusing on zoning. And that makes sense. This commission was created by SB 2674, which was originally a bill that would preempt local control of zoning and kind of override that. So that bill was converted to one that generates this housing supply study committee. So it's not really surprising that the people who are on it are asking about that zoning and kind of steering it towards that direction. That's what I wanted to say about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, any questions, Jay?
I think I'm probably just going to mostly echo what Joe said, but being that we're all members of the Commission for Equitable Housing and Development, I didn't really feel like, and I don't feel like equity is part of the discussion. I think it's basically a supply side. You know, if we build more, it will trickle down and create more affordable housing, which is not an affordable housing plan. It's a way to build more, which you know, of course, nobody's debating that more housing needs to get built. I feel like that's a long, long ago settled discussion. Though, I mean, with the housing crisis, people are coming out and saying maybe that's actually not the case. So anyway, things are changing pretty dramatically, obviously, with housing. But I feel like those voices are missing. And, you know, if we want to have equitable housing, there's way more to it than tweaking things so that more supply can be built. So, you know, I think it would be great for this commission, considering we're focused on equity, to raise some of those points. I know that I'm working with some other folks, you know, again, outside of this commission to bring those points to bear. But anyway, I agree with Joe. And, you know, I think that piece of that piece is really missing. And I also understand that the Multi-Housing Association is funding the study that will be a major part of what this committee is doing. So I think that's problematic as well and kind of speaks to the bent of this committee. So anyway, that's what I have to say about it.
Say that again, Jay. I didn't understand that last thing you just said.
My understanding is that that this committee, part of what the committee is doing is that it is having a study written about supply and kind of what that means. Anyway, an outside consultant is writing a report as part of this committee's charge, I guess, and that is being funded by the Multi-Housing Association, I believe, or at least folks on the kind of the builder side of things. So I think that's a little bit problematic that the funding for it is not coming from the state and doesn't really seem to be coming from a neutral party. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I've heard through the grapevine. So,
okay. Liz?
Yeah, so I have been looking for this data and maybe someone else can answer it. Is there any information on vacant units in the state or in Tucson? Because I would imagine that probably would be useful information for the study if it's not going to be incorporated.
I don't know the answer to that.
And do you know if the city has ever done a study on vacant units in the city?
Sorry, I keep missing the word after vacant.
Vacant units.
Apartments.
I am not aware. I feel like I can feel free if anyone else is aware, but I feel like it would be a bit difficult to do that. So I'm not aware.
You know,
you're just saying kind of vacancy rate in general?
I know that the census has vacancy by like type. So I mean, even vacancy by type of the most recent census data, like, has the city done any analysis of that?
Yes. Sorry. I was thinking of something else when you were saying, on the market study, there is a whole vacancy section. That said, it's changed remarkably. And I've seen updated data recently on that, just in terms of having a very, very low vacancy rate right now.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think it's like 3% in the city. I think we're at like 95 to 97% occupancy, which, you know, you're always going to have some because it takes time to do a turn. This person moves out, they have to, you know, paint the unit and get it fixed up again. So there's always going to be a small portion that's vacant. But in general, we're just about at capacity. Is my understanding.
Yeah, and that's why I'm curious about by type, because the census does divide it by, you know, for rent being withheld from the market, on the market, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay, any other, we're getting short on time here. Any other questions on the housing study?
Joe has his hand up, I believe. Joe?
Oh, Joe? Yeah, I don't see him anymore. Oh, there he is. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I'm muted when I'm not raising my hand as the new format, I guess. I'd also be curious when we're calculating vacancy, if we're calculating how many units aren't being rented as long-term rentals, but are being used as short-term rentals, number one. Number two, I'm not sure if anybody saw the the article in ProPublica this week about the RealPage real estate software that is used across the rental industry. I'll quote real quick. RealPage discourages bargaining with renters and has even recommended that landlords in some cases accept lower occupancy rates in order to raise rents and make more money. It's a real interesting article and you can look it up. That's all.
Ernesto?
Yes, Jim and commissioners, 20 minutes left. You have two very late. You have two lengthy items remaining plus HCD updates.
Yeah.
So you may have to decide. Don't have to, but you may have to decide to postpone one.
Well, I was thinking, I'd like to get through the bylaws if we can. So if everyone's okay with it, we'll table agenda item number 9, which is the roles and responsibilities. We'll take that up at our next meeting in 2 weeks. Does that work for everybody? Are there any objections to that? Okay. All right, any final comments on the housing supply study? All right, so agenda item number 8 is the bylaw review. I guess that's me. So I have sent this out a couple of times to the group. I'm going to share my screen.
While you're doing that, Jim, I just want to check with you real quick. I have received 2 files. One dated October the 3rd, one dated October the 6th. We're reviewing October the 6th, just checking, right?
Correct. Yeah, so those who gave me feedback, previously written feedback, I have incorporated those comments. And I think there's a couple of questions. So does everybody have a copy of this on their on their computer, we want to go through this on the screen.
Jim, I think for open meeting law, it would be good to have it on the screen. I also sent edits on the 11th to you, I think Ernesto and Ann, and they didn't go out to the rest of the commission, but I don't know if it updates.
Okay, Liz, I apologize. I think I see it now. I don't think I incorporated those. Let's go through this. Liz, we're just going to go through this section or article at a time. And if you have any changes or suggestions, please raise your hand and we'll try to get through this. So section 1 is just the name of the organization. Assuming everybody's okay with that. And section article 2 is a legal requirement, which identifies a Sydney ordinance. Any questions or comments? Okay, section article 3 is the declaration of policy. So we have an about gentrification to this. Any other changes or suggestions, article 3?
I had suggested that we put in terminology. In this section.
To put what?
Terminology, just to have a comprehensive list of terminology that's used.
Okay.
Could that be an appendix at the end, like definitions? I mean, that's common to have a section just for definitions.
Typically, definitions are before they are subsequently used.
Okay. And we went through that. You led us through that conversation early on, so I can probably refer back to those and add that in. I'm happy to do that. Okay, Article 4, function and purpose. So we have our mission statement. Any comments or questions on the mission statement?
Okay. Are these subcommittees going to have their own bylaws, or should subcommittee goals and missions also be included in these bylaws?
What would you prefer?
I think that a lot of my feedback was that there's a lack of clarity in terms of a voting commission member and a non-voting commission member, and the subcommittees just aren't addressed at all in these bylaws. So if they're just not going to be addressed, then I'm fine with that. It's just a question.
Nesto or Ann, do you have a thought on that?
My experience is you want everything associated with the commission in one document. So if you are interested in detailing out more information about the subcommittee, I recommend it. You take more time and make sure you get this right in this document. So this will be the main thing that gets adopted and the clerk's office will have their website, etc.
Yeah, I was going to echo the same thing. It's for me, the more documents you have floating around, the greater chance for error and discrepancy.
Okay. All right, so we'll add the subcommittees here. So I'll make these changes and I'll send out a new version. So Liz, I'll go through your updates and make these updates, and then we'll send that again and try to get this approved. Vicki?
Yeah, can I just add about the, I was going to also say, I really think the subcommittees need to be outlined in this document, what they are, who can be part of those subcommittees, and whether those members have voting rights on the subcommittees. Like, I think it really needs to spell out how the subcommittees work and how they relate then to the full commission. That's my suggestion anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I second that, Vicki. I think that that's one point of confusion for me, is I assume that we've been assuming that we can't pass motions in a subcommittee, that we have to get the vote, you know, from the full commission to actually pass anything. So again, just having that clarification would be great.
I know that we had a conversation about like specific duties that was on the agenda for today, but I added about four sections in my edits that included specific duties of commissioners, compensation and reimbursement, good faith and removal, and then time commitment, as well as like references to codes of conduct and conflict of interest policies, because I didn't see that anymore.
Okay. Thank you. That sounds really good. Okay, so any other comments on section article number 4? Okay, article number 5, the membership. So we have 15 voting members and we have up to 9 ex officio members with these focus areas. So 10 are appointed through mayor and council, 5 are appointed by HCD. And then we define the ex officio members. Any comments or questions on this first portion, and then we'll keep going down. Okay. So qualifications, members should, to the extent possible, represent the geographic, demographic, and economic diversity of the community. We want our members to have relevant knowledge and expertise. They have to either have a place of business within the city of Tucson or a resident in the city of Tucson. And then the focus areas are housing, neighborhoods, equity, diversity, inclusivity, economic vitality, and cultural vitality. So there's a couple of changes Mark Clark made. I think this is from Marianne Beerling, the HUD-approved counseling agencies. Any other adjustments to the qualification section?
I have edits that I sent you.
Okay.
I'll incorporate those, Liz. I'm really sorry. Slipped through the cracks.
No worries. I understand.
Shay?
I actually have been wondering about, I went through the, Betty had printed for me the ordinance again, and I had gone through it, and I had seen all these points. But I wonder, like, how, I just wonder how realistic it is that we're going to be able to get to all of them, especially things like the cultural vitality. Like, I guess I understand why they're there, but maybe I'm missing some of the background as to why they're there, because it just feels so broad. It feels so broad, and I just feel like, I personally feel like we need some focus, but I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with them staying in there. I just was curious how all these points, I think they all came from that original ordinance, but I'm just wondering if these are all, we all still feel like these are all still relevant.
Well, it basically leaves it wide open, that's for sure. So, but it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, we do have a lot of people from different backgrounds who are part of this commission, and I think that's part of the strength of the commission. So personally, I'm okay with it.
I agree with John.
Okay, any other comments or thoughts?
Can you just going back up, Jim, to the ex officio members? I think Lantrist is still on there, right? So right there. So we're a voting member now, not an ex officio. So I don't know if you.
True. Okay. Okay. Section 4. Thank you for that, Maggie. Mm-hmm. Terms. So. We are going to serve 4-year terms, and then you can serve 2 consecutive 4-year terms. So, in 8 years total is the maximum commitment. Obviously, if somebody wants to make a smaller commitment, they can, but that means we will be terming off after 8 years. Everybody good with that?
Yeah, just a clarifying question. So if, say, for example, someone were to serve 2 years, take the next term off, and then seek reappointment, would they be eligible for that or no? Is it only 8 years and the duration of that person's life and the commission?
My personal feeling, I think a lot of this stuff is very, very complex. And I think there's a relatively steep learning curve. I just termed out of the Arizona Housing Coalition, and it took me 5 or 6 years to get really comfortable with what that group was doing. So I wouldn't mind seeing maybe 3 consecutive terms, you know, or if somebody wants to take off for a year, they'd be re-eligible to be appointed, but they would have to be reappointed.
Yeah, I just think that we need to specify reappointment.
Okay.
Jim, it does say that, Liz, that you, members may not serve more than 2 consecutive 4-year terms. Does that help any?
Yeah.
My question is it 2 consecutive 4-year terms in totality? That's my only question.
Right. But if you okay. We can consult with the clerk's office and the city attorney's office.
Okay. All right. Removal and replacement. Section 5, so if somebody fails to attend 3 meetings or 40% of the meetings, we can remove them as a commission member.
Does this include subcommittees? If someone fails to attend subcommittees meetings, does that result in removal?
That could result in removal from the subcommittee.
So then a follow-up question is, if we remove people from subcommittees and we don't have quorum anymore, then does that mean that we have decided that that subcommittee is no longer necessary and people have to join a different one?
Well, we need, that's one of the roles of the commission members is to participate in a subcommittee. So, I don't know. What do you think, Liz?
I just think that we need to have a specific duties section, and in that we can enumerate participating in subcommittees and then just have subsections where we address the subcommittees perhaps in each of these sections.
Okay. Any other comments or thoughts on this? All right. Section 6, concurrent service. I think this is, that's basically a city code. So Article 6, procedures. So we want to obviously empower everybody to speak and be open and have it be a collaborative, positive environment. We have a chairperson, a vice chairperson, and this is saying also a secretary, which we have not currently appointed. So if this is something that we want to do, would be discussed during the roles and responsibilities. And then we're going to term out officers after 4 years. Mindy?
Thank you. I think this might be the area where we might want to put in the committee follows Robert's rules. That might help with, like, Victoria had one of the person from the audience was wondering, how do we structure ourselves and we follow Robert's rules? So that, just a suggestion.
I thought we had brought that in here. I don't remember where it is.
Okay.
I do recall a reference to Robert's rules of order. It might be useful to have that terminology section just to define it and then maybe make reference to it. And that way we can always refer back to the rules of order by like hyperlink or something if there's ever a question.
Here we go. There it is, parliamentary authority. So we do have, it's a lot, it's end of section 6. We've got that in there. Okay, where were we? Okay, so we have the officers. Yeah, so we have the officers. So everybody good with the secretary position?
Something that's not clear to me is the secretary responsible for drafting the meeting minutes or just reviewing a draft of the meeting minutes?
I think it's reviewing the draft and then ensuring that we've got enough detail, the proper level of detail.
So then, So then the city would be responsible still for a draft of the meeting minutes?
That's my understanding.
Yeah, I would like that as well, because it's unclear to me who's actually taking the notes. And I think we should have that specified.
So
The secretary will review the draft meeting minutes prior to the following meeting and can add details if desired.
I personally feel like a secretary position is not necessary if the city is drafting the meeting minutes. Like, if someone wants that position so that they can say they're a secretary somewhere, I totally support that. But, like, I don't think it's necessary.
And this is Vicky. I think there needs to be clarification. So, I mean, if the city is doing the minutes, that's fine. But then it should state that. We need to state in the bylaws who's responsible for actually doing that.
I also personally think that it would be useful to have an expectation of like when the meeting minutes will be received, like within 48 hours of the subsequently scheduled meeting, because it'll make it easier for us to have expectations that either are or are not being met.
Okay. The reason this was something that I had added to the original bylaws that were provided. And the reason I did it is I have a hard time taking detailed notes while I'm running the meeting. And there's times where I go back to look at the meeting minutes and there's not a lot of times there's not a lot of context in terms of what was discussed or some of the finer points of the meeting. And it's hard to rely on my memory for everything. And so I would just like to have an additional person on the commission who can maybe add a little bit of flavor and just try to get a little bit more detail in there. That's I think would be valuable for me in particular, but I think other commission members as well, because it's hard to remember. There's so many things we talk about as a group. It's hard to remember everything when you're going back and looking at the previous meeting. And I think, you know, it's always a double-edged sword with meeting minutes, because you don't want to have, I think sometimes you don't want to have too many details, but then we also want to make sure that we capture, you know, action items and things that were discussed and future agenda items and all that stuff. Shay?
Yeah, I brought this up. I absolutely agree, Jim. I feel like it should be a commission member. To me, that is what the secretary should be doing. And their job is to just be listening and taking notes. And I get how that makes it hard for them to participate. But at the same time, I feel like that's the only way we can maintain, you know, I feel like the steering direction, and especially for setting the future agenda items, I feel like that needs to come from us. And so I feel like this is what the secretary should be doing. It's just taking the minutes, making sure especially that we're following up with any items that need to go on the next agenda and that there's clear follow through. And right now it's just, to me, too ambiguous. And things are going to fall through the cracks because it's just not clearly specified.
Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, taking into consideration what Shay is saying, I guess maybe it's a short question, hopefully, to city staff. I was under the impression, city staff, that a member or employee would be handling, like, the assisting with the agenda and taking notes and all of that stuff. Am I misinformed, or did I misunderstand something?
No, then that's what Nesto does for us, and he's doing a good job. I just think it would be good to have somebody else, a second person, who's taking notes and reviewing the meeting minutes and potentially adding context or flavor where they feel it's appropriate. Liz?
Is anyone willing to be a secretary? Because I feel like we're having this conversation before we've even like sussed out whether anyone's willing to do it. I'm not.
Neither am I. I feel that someone from the city of Tucson ought to be taking minutes for us so that we can be fully participating in the meeting. It's impossible to be part of a committee and actively involved in discourse while taking minutes, in my experience. That's it.
Well, we're missing a lot of commission members. All right, let me work on that. Maybe we can get a volunteer.
Otherwise, I would like to suggest that perhaps maybe the secretary role could be something that's like a compensated position, like on contract with the city, because it is a lot of work and it would be a commitment of more time than other commissioners are making. So in the interest of equity, I do think it should be compensated.
Okay. Let's put optional for now and let's come back to this. So finishing up section two, which is the officers. So we define the chair, the vice chair, secretary, the term for the officers, and then we go into the duties. So we identify the duties of the chair, the duties of the vice chair, and removal of the officers, which can be done by via two-thirds vote of the members. Any comments or questions on this? Okay. Got two more pages, so hang with me, guys, and then we'll adjourn. Okay, duty of commissioners. So attend the meetings, review, and be prepared to discuss meeting materials, actively serve on at least one subcommittee, understand the mission and goals, actively talk and listen to community members, and remain mindful of our service on CEHD is to serve the city of Tucson. Any comments or questions on our duties?
I just had a note that perhaps it would be useful to specify ex officio and voting members, if this applies to both or one.
Okay, staff support. So HCD does provide us support, participation of audience members. So we're gonna strive to include audience members to the extent it's reasonably possible. And then guidelines for audience participation, to participate on agenda items as appropriate. So any comments on this, on audience participation?
I know that it says invited to participate on agenda items as appropriate, and then it has in the subsection call to the audience. Is that optional or is that something that's required based on open meeting law?
Well, we do a call to the audience during the beginning, obviously. And, you know, I think if it's appropriate and audience members, like I think Joe's had a lot of really good input, and I don't want to stifle that. So if I feel as though it's not productive or constructive, we've got the ability to shut it down, but as long as it remains those things, I think it's good for us to have it.
Okay, so it's as appropriate as determined by the chair?
Yes.
Okay, maybe we should specify that the chair is the one who determines where it's appropriate.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay, development of the agenda. So the chair, the vice chair, HCD, and the subcommittee chairs are all
all have input. And I think if any of the commission members have input, if you email us, we will work to incorporate those into the agenda. And then we talk about Robert's Rules, Article 7. We have to have meet quorum, which is 8 members. We have to meet the open meeting laws for the state of Arizona. Here's where we talk about subcommittees. So we have the ability of creating additional subcommittees. I will clarify the 3.
Jim, real quick, it's Mike. Just jumping back to Parliamentary Authority, Section 7, real quick. Request from the city, if possible, would you please provide us with copies of Robert's Rules of Procedures? Just a request. I'm done.
Jim, question. I know that we've determined that 3 subcommittees are what we're working with. I know this says that we can create subcommittees as needed by motion. Can we get rid of subcommittees as needed by motion? I mean, I don't expect that that's something we currently need, but.
Yes. Any other comments on Section 3 subcommittees? Okay, conflict of interest. Obviously, we want to know if anybody has a conflict of interest. So if the commission ever gets involved in financial decisions where a party would personally benefit, the expectation is they would excuse themselves from that discussion.
Can we write that a little bit more clearly instead of just referencing the statute?
Sure.
And then also, is there an expectation that that commissioner would just recuse themselves from the votes, or would they be expected to excuse themselves?
I think just from that discussion, and vote, we don't want to lose members because of, they're involved in some affordable housing development. So if we were ever to say, do we want to go after Project X or Project Y, and somebody in the commission has a personal or professional tie to one of those two, it would be expected they would excuse themselves from that discussion and vote, but then they rejoined the commission once it was complete.
And that would hold true also for program participants, I would imagine.
Program participants?
Recipients of Section 8, for example.
Yes, if there's something that we're recommending or voting on, yes. Okay, so we don't really have any true authority other than to advise Mayor and Council. So Article 8, Article 9. We have the ability of amending these bylaws with 2/3 vote. And that's it. So I will discuss this with Nesto and HCD. If any of you have further comments, please email them to me. I will get these out again before our next commission meeting, and hopefully we can get them approved. Any other comments or questions overall on the bylaws?
Good work, Jim. Thank you so much.
You bet. Okay.
Thank you, everyone. So we're gonna table agenda item number 9. At agenda item number 10, HCD updates. Anne, is there anything you want to bring up?
Yeah, just because Liz asked me to bring up a couple things. I promise I'll be super short. One is just to make sure you all are aware at this week's mayor and council meeting, mayor and council allocated another $3 million to housing and community development from ARPA state and local fiscal recovery funding. $1.5 million is being added to the bridge shelter operations. That's where we're operating a few temporary shelters for our houseless community. And then the other $1.5 million is to start exploring and looking at trying to provide a low barrier congregate shelter for persons experiencing homelessness. So we are, so that was done this past week. A couple other things, I know that Liz went over the whole wait list with you all at the last meeting. The timeline on that right now is that the wait list will be opened on January 3rd. And so we'll be starting to do a lot more education and be providing a lot more information on that. And then last thing she asked me to bring up was just to make sure you know, on October 5th, Mayor and Council passed a motion supporting creating a solar empowerment program. So this was Housing and Community Development's item, and there were three pieces to it. One is to support an existing program that's between Tucson Old Pueblo Credit Union and Technicians for Sustainability. But the second piece is to start adding solar panels on the city's housing portfolio. So really looking at how do we make it both cheaper for low-income residents and cheaper for the city over time. And then third is adding a solar empowerment program for low-income homeowners, similar and or connected to our rehabilitation program. So for low-income households interested in solar, that is something that we'll be adding. So that's all. I know it's late, but we can go into more detail in the future if people have questions on those. But I promised my boss I'd bring that stuff up.
Congratulations, Anne. That's great. Any questions for Anne? Okay. Our next commission meeting is going to be November 3rd and then December 1st. Please meet with your subcommittees before. Well, I'm not sure everybody's going to meet again. I don't think the affordable housing is going to meet again for next commission meeting. But if you have agenda items, please email them to Ernesto, Mike, and me. And we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Hi, Jim. There you are.
Hi.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll see you guys.
Bye.